dismissing and oversimplifying an NFT to just being a digital receipt does not take into account all of the nuances of digital ownership and what exactly that entails.
Once you can have an open mind and get past these blue chip projects and try to see what other projects exist, you realize that Web3 is a space actually battling disparity of opportunity and wealth that we traditionally see in capitalism.
People consumed 45 times more energy watching Gangnam Style in 2019 than proof of stake Ethereum will use in just 1 year.
This future is coming from massive institutions, whether we like it or not.
Fifth episode of Not a JPEG, a podcast about the future of NFTs and Web3, geared towards the creators and entrepreneurs building and innovating within the space.
Where each week we explore everyday sectors in modern society and how NFTs will revolutionize how we start, scale, and sell businesses. Now, before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. If you can, hit the subscribe button on any of the podcasting apps you're listening to, or go check us out on YouTube. Yes, all of our podcasts are recorded, so you can see our beautiful faces. And if you have social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, check us out at Not a JPEG Podcast to stay up to date with everything that we're up to, all new episodes and new content. So today's episode builds off of episode 4, where we explored how established brands can build meaningfully in Web3. Today, we're discussing the word NFT itself.
And oh boy, is it ever a dirty word. It feels like wherever you look outside of the space, the word itself is constantly being shit on. Simply put.
Yeah.
And today we're going to dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So back when we were writing episode 4, this whole idea of how to navigate NFTs as a touchy subject for the public was something that we keep talking about, to the point where we're like, okay, we need to make this into a whole episode. And in fact, it's going to even be talked about in the next episode further, because this is a really important thing that established brands and new entrepreneurs have to navigate and handle with great care. So the purpose of the discussion is to address these concerns brands might face with their existing consumers regarding their foray into Web3, and how to manage the hate, the accusations, and the outright misunderstanding with patient and authentic education, and creating unprecedented value to all consumers, early adopter or not.
Absolutely. And with the introduction of any, you know, innovative new technology, there will always be a group of people that dislike the technology and hate it and are resistant to adopting it. And this really harkens back to that second episode, how we talked about all of the examples of the internet and how it was perceived in the 90s.
Yeah, the proportion of haters, you know, even back with the internet, starts as a significant part of the population. But over the years, it does dwindle to just a minority of the consumer base. You know, we are with Web3 adoption as we were with widespread internet adoption or computer adoption in the 90s.
And I think there are a few things that are responsible for that. The lack of understanding of the tech, coupled with all these headlines of people making mass amounts of money and investors making money, losing money, that sort of thing, coupled with the alienating and at times exclusive, you know, crypto bro culture and speak, really makes for a perfect storm that is very easy to hate on by those outside of the space.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a perfect storm. But as we continue to break down the barriers that have just been mentioned, you know, the technology becomes easier to understand, easier to use. the gold rush and the days of making massive amounts of money are basically behind us, like we've mentioned a couple of times now. And, you know, the community and the language that, you know, the crypto bro culture uses, you know, becomes more inclusive and experienced based versus tech based. Hopefully we will see that tide shift.
Oh, I think we definitely will as things progress. But for now, it seems that NFT is a dirty word.
Yep.
And it feels like everywhere you look with the mainstream media, the portrayal of NFTs is perpetuating this utter dislike for them. Now, we have to really talk about how media portrays things right now. And yep. that, you know, and you can speak to this as somebody who works in the ad world. The media is built off of publishing high impact stories, usually using anger and hate, because the actual emotion of anger and hate drives people to act, whether it's clicking, sharing, or commenting, which in turn drives the bottom line, which is more traffic looking at ads and therefore more ad spend and more money.
And by the way, this isn't made up. Statistically, anger sells more than fear. It sells more than happiness and positivity, and certainly far more than sadness.
Yeah, which is, you know, a comment on human behavior, but it's kind of sad, unfortunately, that anger is what drives us to do things. But you know, this taking advantage of anger is why the average consumer has been so easily trained to accept things at face value from a headline, and thus has not really critically explored the many facets and nuances of NFTs and Web3 advancements. They take things as a face value and just get angry at it.
So with this in mind, you know, consumer feelings towards NFTs and Web3 as a whole is something every brand must research and must understand or have a good grasp on, you know, before you begin to build in Web3, especially at this early time and especially given the current feelings of people towards the space. And, you know, without that, launching an NFT project without that understanding, without that comprehension at this time could actually break your project and quite possibly even fracture a little bit of brand loyalty and trust from your consumers if you do not navigate it well.
Not to scare you or anything, you know.
It's just the times we're currently living in. So
yeah, it's something to really consider because, you know, you may be excited in your marketing department or sales department to launch this NFT, but maybe it's not the right time for you. And that's something to consider. And we're going to talk about that all throughout this episode and the next. So
I was going to say that you can probably tell we're obviously very bullish on the technology and very excited about all of its potential. And don't get us wrong, there are a lot of amazing opportunities within the space for people to grasp and just pursue and create and do. But at the same time, there are also these watch outs that you have to navigate. So we're going to show you both sides of the coin today.
Based on our interactions, our research, our reading over the last 20 months, these are what appears to be the top reasons why the average consumer thinks an NFT is a dirty word. Today, we're going to evaluate them from both sides, as Michael said, to enable you, the creator, to empathize with both sides and then strategize against these behaviors. So, first, and this is probably one of the most popular ones, the absurdity of a $400,000 plus sale of a monkey JPEG and how a wealthy select group of people or companies have gotten wealthy or rich off of something that a user cannot hold or use. So, this argument is in specific reference to the Bored Ape Yacht Club and CryptoPunks, which have captured and nurtured so beautifully the hate of many people. It's also more pointed at holders, people who bought in at the right time, were in the right time, right place, but it can apply to the creators of pre-existing fan bases. So this issue truly boils down to disparity and is often where an average user has to take a big learning leap to understand the technology and become further convinced this is the future.
Right. And the value that these high-cost projects create I think it's hard to grasp for most because 90% or maybe even more than 90% of people would never spend that much money on art or collectibles in the first place.
Oh,
right?
Definitely not.
Like if you wouldn't spend $400K on an Andy Warhol print, why on earth would you spend that same amount of money on a useless JPEG of a monkey?
Yeah, something right? you can't touch or hold. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Furthermore, we see that same disparity in general, you know, through other status symbols, you know, wearing certain brands, you know, are a sign of wealth, right? Like a Rolex or designer clothing, that sort of thing. That's an easier concept to grasp, but still not an easier one to afford for the vast majority. So there's a huge, huge disconnect there for the average consumer.
Yeah, to most, actually, this level of wealth that some people are spending on, you know, these really expensive NFT projects is maybe only experienced with buying a house. And even that is now out of reach for most people in our generation and beyond. So why would you spend or put value on a digital JPEG when you cannot hold it, live in it, eat it? You know, it's... logically, it's not an asset in reach with most, right?
Can't eat it. Definitely can't eat it.
Well, you never know. Yeah. Who knows? Metaverse integrations. You never know.
Right. It's basically not an asset within reach for most people, at least not the ones we're discussing. You know, the blue chips, the Bored Apes, the CryptoPunks, that sort of thing. These are higher end. They're expensive. They are status symbols. They are digital status symbols. And they are the ones that frequently make mainstream news because they're very easy to hate.
Yeah, and drive that anger for clicks and driving that ad revenue. So for most people that are resonating specifically with this argument of disparity, they tend to describe themselves as anti-capitalist, and they truly desire for equity and fairness for all, especially those that are underserved. You know, this, their acts of advocacy are very just and fantastic because they are making attempts to look out for others who may never have access to wealth-creating assets, especially assets you can't touch, right? So where they're coming from is fair. I get it. But the truth of the matter is that the projects that are being demonized for the disparity and unfairness, you know, Bored Ape Yacht Club, the CryptoPunks, these are just two projects that have gotten way too much attention to polarize and cause clickbait headlines and drive that ad revenue.
And by the way, we do fully agree that the price is absurd. They are probably, you know, slightly overvalued. Again, it all depends on what these brands end up building and creating. And, you know, that's right now it's been speculative for the most part. But as they keep adding value, maybe it will slowly start to justify the price. Maybe not. And that's absurd, especially when you factor in, you know, the fact that there is not much utility other than the status symbol
for the average person.
And even for some who are wealthy as well.
Yeah.
But like we said, just like any fine art market, the average person will never participate in that part of commerce. You know, same thing with the, you know, with the Andy Warhol example that I gave earlier. You know, the average person will never buy an Andy Warhol or a Picasso, and the average person will never buy a Bored Ape. Yet all that focus in the news is on this 1% as a reason to hate the remaining 99.
Yep.
And so, you know, these select digital arts, art NFTs are, you know, a speculative commodity, and in their current form are this sign of wealth and social status. But you know, we may not see value in that, but someone does, and someone has been willing to pay the price for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So once you can have an open mind and get past these handful of, you know, punchy outliers and blue chip projects and try to see what other projects exist and what they're advocating for, you realize that Web3 is a space actually battling disparity of opportunity and wealth that we traditionally see in capitalism.
And that's the vast majority of the space. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get us wrong, as evidenced by the two very hated examples. We have seen, you know, the old world capitalism trickle in, you know, the one that is shat on a lot. It's true. you can't escape from it entirely. That's just the pros and the cons of a free market.
Yeah, especially a free speculative market.
Yeah,
for sure. But the reality is there has never been an opportunity like in Web3 to actually own your likeness digitally, as in taking your likeness from the big megacorps of Facebook and TikTok and have control over however you want to shape it. Let that sink in, guys. This autonomy, this ownership of yourself and your actions is building fairness and opportunity that has been actually stripped from us in our current reality. Furthermore, you can be an active and valued participant in projects that you want to be part of and directly influence and help build more opportunities that can therefore serve more of these marginalized and underserved populations. This can be done in a variety of ways, you know, through supporting a project that's doing nonprofit work or donating to charity or supporting causes that you mm-hmm. can relate to. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very common thing to see in the women in Web3 space. Almost every project has a cause that it's backing, whether it's LGBT rights or animal rights or BIPOC art. Like, it's endless, mm-hmm. the amount of good that's happening with a lot of these projects. And these projects, they're usually going for about $50 USD to maybe $200 USD.
That was in the bear market too. So it's a lot cheaper now.
Oh yeah. Very accessible for people to participate in. And these projects, without the huge price tags, they're still building during this downturn. They are not being turned off by this economic downturn whatsoever. And they're actually doing a lot more to drive value at an affordable rate. You don't even need to start your own project, which is another opportunity in Web3, to be part of building equity for others. You can just join in however you feel you want to.
And, you know, hearing you say that, it's such a real shame that none of this gets the spotlight that, frankly, it deserves.
It does.
Right? It deserves more eyeballs. It deserves more coverage because it's doing real good, like Katarina mentioned. And it's oftentimes fighting for the exact same causes that the NFT haters would actually support themselves.
Yeah.
You know, but again, that doesn't get views, it doesn't drive clicks, so it doesn't get seen.
Unfortunately. So, but even more, Michael, the most equitable part of NFTs is, you know, the fact that you can buy in, you can participate, and then once you're done with it, you can now sell it to someone so they can also participate. You can't do this with your traditional, you know, membership to a points club or a subscription. You can't transfer that to somebody else that's maybe your neighbor or friend or somebody you meet that's underserved and could benefit from the opportunity. You can't do that. You can't give it away for free and somebody can suddenly experience all the benefits that are there to offer. You know, this ability, this cycle of creating opportunity in NFTs is really leveling the playing fields for wealth creation for all.
Wow. Amen. Amen. So that was a really strong start with the first point.
Strap in, guys. This is going to get it even more.
Yeah, we got a few more for you.
Yes.
We've got a few more for you.
Next argument that we see all over Twitter, and I've actually seen this a lot on tech blogs, NFTs don't actually mean ownership of the original file. Just means a digital receipt of owning the file. So this argument stems from the idea that an NFT is only the actual art or picture that you are buying, or it's only the perks or benefit that you're subscribing to. You know, unfortunately, this view completely overlooks what NFT ownership actually means and degrades it to simply calling it a digital receipt.
And yes, it's worth mentioning that when you buy an NFT, you do not have the original art file or whatever picture you bought. I mean, yes, you can right-click, save it to your computer, da-da-da-da-da, the same, you know, argument you often hear with NFTs, but the actual file itself is hosted somewhere else. You know, it's either on a centralized entity's database or on a peer-to-peer cloud server like the IPFS, the Interplanetary File System. Nor do you own the source of whatever perks or benefits your NFT may offer. You know, that is still coming from the creator. It's coming from their head. It's coming from their team. And it is being delivered to you. You simply have access to them, and the NFT unlocks that access.
So the big argument here that we're seeing is, you know, because the actual image you're buying or perks you're buying are not on your computer, if that database goes down or the access suddenly disappears, suddenly your NFT is worth nothing because the thing isn't there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's just a digital receipt. It's not the actual thing. You don't actually have digital ownership, blah, 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 okay? Let's go back to episode two. As we said then, NFT ownership at its core is the public record that specifies a line of code or metadata has moved from one location to your address. That's it. Okay. When you look at its bare bones, yeah, it's pretty wild to think that a string of code has any real value, sometimes in the thousands or millions. So it could be easy to understand why someone would be hesitant and would argue that an NFT ownership is not anything more than a digital receipt because it's just a line of code.
And it's really hard to wrap our heads around that because the technology and NFTs are so young. Yet when you look at other examples, since the beginning of time, we have also assigned value to paper, to plastic, to metals, to minerals and gems, you know, and given them a perceived value to ease with trade.
Yeah, actually, cash, paper money, is a receipt, just like an NFT or the metadata for physical gold bars that is supposed to be held in our central banks. And they're supposed to have it on reserve, but newsflash, they haven't had them on reserve since the 1970s. That's why paper money is called fiat.
Yeah. And very similarly, you know, from shells to rocks to fiat dollars to diamonds, many of the prices of these things are actually inflated and not based in fact of any utility that they provide beyond the value we as a society have intrinsically associated with them.
Yeah, it's how we conduct trade.
Mm-hmm.
So a line of code differs from all these other stores of value because you can't hold it, you mm-hmm. know, akin to the numbers you see on the banking app on your phone saying that you have X amount of dollars in your bank account. You can't hold that money. In fact, that money probably isn't even in the bank.
Unless you pull it out from an
ATM. Yeah, you can go pull it out, but in reality, that money you can't actually hold.
No.
So at that
moment.
Not at that moment. But most importantly, the difference with NFTs and other stores of value is that the experience and its existence actually solves the issue for digital autonomous lives to proceed forward. So as we've said in almost every episode now, let's say it again. What's revolutionary with NFTs and the blockchain is that it solves digital authentication, something that we have never been able to accomplish before.
We've never had it before.
No, never. No. In case you didn't know, it's never been done before. An NFT on the blockchain certifies a transaction record that an item is unique and not interchangeable. We can verify this trustlessly. There's no banks. There's no middlemen mm-hmm. to fudge the numbers. This asset went from one place to another place. And that authentication applied has been simply described as digital ownership.
Digital what?
Digital ownership.
Nice.
That is what it is, guys. So, and due to that public record of the metadata being associated with this address, there are ways to instantly verify that you, the owner of the NFT, is in your wallet and you get whatever perks or benefits that are intrinsically or extrinsically assigned to that metadata outside of the blockchain ledger. So this is where we talk about all those benefits of access or perks or whatever that verification that's in your wallet allows you to access all the benefits, whether it's owning this collectible piece of art or being able to do X, Y, Z thing. It is verified, it is immutable anywhere in the world and cannot be counterfeited.
Yeah, and that includes, like you said, everything. Art, collectibles, mm-hmm. memberships, you know, loyalty cards, metaverse integrations, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in sum, dismissing and oversimplifying an NFT to just being a digital receipt does not take into account all of the nuances of digital ownership and what exactly that entails, right? It is. It's a gross oversimplification that only really focuses on the fact that, oh, I can't access this one picture if the link is broken, versus actually focusing on the value that we associate with that line of code, as well as the future value that we will get from that line of code as NFTs, you know, eventually become predominantly utility based.
Yep. That's basically that. It's all about shifting our focus away from the image we see in front of us to everything that we can associate with it and the future of that.
And really evaluating how we assign value
to
digital assets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
So those were two fairly big and major points. Very important, very much, you know, two, I would say, some of the strongest arguments. But here is another one that I would say is probably one of the biggest and frankly, most jarring barriers for most people who are turned off by the NFT space. And that is that crypto bro culture and crypto bro speak is annoying, it's unprofessional, it's intimidating, and just outright fucking stupid. Again, not my words, theirs. But
amen.
Yeah. You know, this technical lingo and jargon always plagues a new technology, you know, because oftentimes we lack the ability and the words to communicate the benefits, especially of an up and coming tech, to those who are non-adoptees and maybe do not understand that jargon. It's something we've seen all the time historically.
Oh yeah, we can apply that right to computers. You know, back when they first came out, they were discussed based on their capacity, like the RAM, the computing capacity. No average person could relate to that. And that's why it took a while for computers to catch on for the public, because it's akin to speaking a foreign language about a foreign subject. It wasn't experience-based, it was technical-based.
Right. And blockchain tech, at its core, is opaque at the best of times.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? It combines terminology of finance and technology, which I would say are two industries well known for their complexity of language, and really two industries that a lot of people don't understand or not incentivized to understand.
Yeah, or like we were just told throughout our whole lives, oh yeah, we'll pay somebody to take care of that. We don't need to worry about that. We don't need to think about it, whatever.
Yeah, financial literacy and technological literacy, at least the underpinnings and the behind the scenes of it, are something that are just
lacking society in general and not emphasized in education.
Right. And so, you know, we then have to figure out ways to simplify it and to bring people together in a way that makes sense. And while, you know, the technical lingo of the Web3 space wasn't necessarily too big of a leap because there's tons and tons of resources out there to help you navigate it, we have seen the formation of the archetype of the crypto bro, right? It's a very real trope.
Yeah. Truthfully, hot take, I cannot wait for this to go by the wayside.
Of course.
I'm sorry. I have friends that are degens, but I'm just being honest. As a woman entering this space, it was challenging to navigate this way of speaking. It felt like it was very much catered to a specific person, which it was. You know, I'm going to say it, that know-it-all, uninclusive finance man, the ones that are loud and, you know, for people outside, very easy to blame, you know, a group of early adopters in this space to make quick money and to brag about making that quick money. For somebody on the outside, it gives you even more of a reason to dislike them, especially if you're the anti-capitalist type. They embody everything they hate about capitalism.
Yeah, it's true. And I do agree that that mentality may be alienating, and it really poses a barrier of entry to those who are really turned off by that.
Or just don't fit in to that group. Like they don't feel represented in that group.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. Absolutely 100% fair. However, I will say that these degens were responsible for this last wave of adoption and the major push.
Okay, go on.
And it seemed, in my opinion, like it was necessary, right? Because here's what happened, right? We have this new tech. We have people entering this space. It's uncharted waters. We're all learning. We're all growing at the same time. So, you know, this dumbing down of the language and creating sort of a shared lingo and shared terminology and way of communicating and talking and being created a shared sense of camaraderie, right? To navigate this unknown space. And whether we like this behavior or not, it definitely became a rallying cry to build community. And I would say it's been a driving force behind some of the mass adoption that we've seen over the last 20 months.
Michael, are you defending the degens?
Listen, I just think we need to acknowledge that this definitely had a role, an important role and a place in community building and in the wave of adoption that we've seen. And mind you, the whole point of not only our podcast, but the episode is to look at both sides of the coin and help listeners, especially those who hate NFTs with the passion of a thousand burning suns.
Yeah, that's fair.
To understand the importance and significance of what we've been seeing, especially of this one aspect of the space that they absolutely hate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair.
And
I
would say that as we mature as a community, you know, it is time to become a bit more inclusive, you know, to diversify and evolve our language and how we communicate and behave, especially if we want to be taken more seriously, and especially if we want to welcome the next wave of adopters into the space with open arms.
Degens, I guess, will continue to exist in future bull runs of crypto, mm-hmm. as they have with stonks and every financial product. But as more people enter Web3 with intentionality of building or supporting projects that have real value beyond just the floor price, the numbers might dwindle.
Yeah, and degen culture will not be synonymous with NFT culture, I think. It will absolutely still exist. It's going to be a subset, a group of people of a smaller community, just like the internet has a variety of different, you know, subsets of and groups of people, right? For the most part, internet talk used to be just one big thing, and internet culture used to be its own thing. Now it's just culture, and now we do have and see, you know, specific groups, from the 4chaners and the Redditors to those who are very, very heavy into memes, you know, to our parents who still think that LOL means lots of love.
Right? Yeah.
It's accommodated everybody from all walks of life. And I believe we'll see the same in NFTs and Web3.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I agree with you, okay? I get it. And this language to communicate over time will improve as we find new ways to present the actual experience of NFTs versus the tech, right? Now, some would take what we're saying right now and counter it by saying if you don't understand the jargon or the technical language, it could actually set somebody who's unknowing up for a situation of exploitation, mainly because they may sign something or see something that they don't fully understand, and something can happen because, you know, it is still kind of a wild west. There are these scams and things that people can click on and do and they lose everything. But to this, we say that although understanding the technical lingo is vital for anyone using any technology to increase your overall autonomy, you know, let us not forget that there are still Nigerian princes tricking people on email to this day. You know, regardless of the fact that you need to understand the lingo to understand a tech, there are still ways to increase safety, inclusion, and the creation of accessible spaces like we have seen with email and Nigerian princes. And this increases our understanding without using degen speak or technical language like we do currently. So it will change over time.
It will definitely become more accessible, and the barriers to entry will, without a doubt, get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Another point we see, especially when it comes to NFTs and quote unquote the metaverse, is people say, well, I don't want to live in a digital VR future that we access from home wearing a bulky headset. And frankly, I'm with them.
Yeah, me too.
And many people are. You know, most people are hesitant to accept our rapidly digitizing world. And rightfully so. You know, a world where we have one life in the physical realm and then another one that, you know, looks like reality but is fully online is jarring to think about. It's very Black Mirror. It's very dystopian.
Yeah, very much so. But gonna hit you guys with the hard truth.
Here you go.
you know, we already have a second digital life and we spend a lot of time building our digital personas and our interactions. You know, this is all thanks to Web 2 and social media. Sure. Mm-hmm. We're not wearing goggles yet. Okay.
Yet.
But we do walk around with our phones strapped to our body somehow, be it in a pocket purse or right in our hand as we're crossing the street, you know, with digital ID very much on the near horizon for Canada. And Europe is unveiling its digital euro right now. This future is coming from massive institutions, whether we like it or not. You know, and you can access society and not participate just like people did with smartphones and with social media. There's nothing wrong with that. But at a certain point, you will stop being able to access services to the same degree that people who've opted in would.
As society becomes more in tune with this digital space, and as we start to adopt, you know, more digital technology and these advancements occur, those who choose not to adopt them will slowly be phased out. It's just how the world has worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you a very relevant example, one that, you know, hits close for me. My father has never really adopted online shopping. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. He prefers the old school way. He prefers going to the store, holding the object, assessing it, making the purchase. It's part of the experience for him, and it's part of daily life for him. And this is great, but his options are definitely limited geographically, and they're limited to what that specific retailer has in stock in his immediate area. I, on the other hand, have obviously adopted Amazon Prime and online shopping, and we can buy anything we want, get it shipped the next day. And my father is often surprised at what I am able to find online and in stock. And, you know, that's what I get through adoption. And that's what he doesn't. Now, I will say I do a lot of online shopping for him. I buy him stuff that I come across if he needs them. It is part of our relationship, very much so. But if you do not have someone who loves you or is willing to do that for you, you are slowly phased out, or at least you lose substantial access to these goods and these services within sort of the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can give another example to that. That's a really good one there. I think a lot of people can relate to that with their parents or grandparents. But another one that's really recent is, especially in Canadian cities, I don't know about the rest of the world, but it's the use of QR codes everywhere.
Oh, I don't think anyone has had a better comeback story than the QR code.
Oh, absolutely not. Like, definitely one of the biggest ones of our generation, for sure. So during COVID, it was everywhere, but especially at restaurants and bars to replace the physical menu. You know, it was put in place to prevent the spread of COVID. And all right, it was a good idea in theory, but things are opening up. But the QR code menu still exists,
mm-hmm.
especially here in our city. And some restaurants aren't bringing physical menus back, period. You know, it's a petty example, but if you don't have a smartphone or your smartphone dies on you when you're at the restaurant, which
yep.
has happened to us many times.
Many times.
Or you don't have a friend at the table that does have a smartphone, you might be out of luck.
And I know this probably sounds like a really small and fairly insignificant example, but it's very relevant to how our digital future is unfolding. It's these small little incremental steps, inch by inch, that occur through commonplace actions like online shopping, like looking at a menu, you know, in a restaurant, that you slowly begin to adopt the technology as it ramps up and scales up to some of the more important sectors of our world.
Mm-hmm.
And although mass adoption, you know, of the full-blown metaverse headsets are definitely a ways away, AR headsets are not. They're on the horizon. Apple AR glasses, I believe, are expected to launch next year in 2023. And I know that Google Glass has actually already begun field testing them this past summer. So it's coming sooner than you think.
Wow. Wow, that'll be really interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah.
So the AR glasses, just like the cell phone, eventually everyone's going to be convinced to adopt them somehow based on the experience. And with that, NFTs will also experience the same thing. So moving forward, let's talk about point number five here. The arguments that we experience and against NFTs is that, you know, the previous negative reputation of cryptocurrencies is often slapped onto NFTs just blatantly, as without even thinking about it. So yep. With one of the most dramatic crashes of crypto being Luna, very recently, you know, I'm sure you've heard about it, or somebody that's happened, or the mainstream media has talked about it. You know, we cannot deny that pump and dumps, insider bets and tradings, and straight up scams are occurring. You know, look at the fact that a large portion of people who think still that Bitcoin is an illicit currency used on the Silk Road. You know, this is over a decade ago, 2011, when all of that happened. But the media has painted it a certain way, and most people are still accepting that at face value. Even the Bitcoin has changed so much since then, right? The amount of negative news oftentimes with these cases, not all the time, but oftentimes have been blown out of proportion, or it's not based in full contextual fact.
And there's a bit of a theme here, right? It goes back to our previous point. Anger sells.
Yep, absolutely. So the truth here is that many of these issues of scams have been debunked, you know, after the anger sold, and thoroughly researched to be proven either misled, exaggerated, or not portraying the full story here. And it's really important when you're learning about new technologies like crypto, like NFTs, you need to have an open mind, see both sides, and get the full story.
Yeah. Right? And with that said, though, with any new technology, scams are always going to be rampant until solutions are created to battle them.
Yeah, that's true.
There will always be scummy people, bad people who jump in to exploit human vulnerability by taking advantage of people's enthusiasm and, frankly, ignorance with new technology, especially in those initial waves of adoption.
Yeah, I can give you a great example with email. The early days of email were rampant with credit card scams, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But then SSL was eventually created and that issue diminished. But you guys have to remember, these issues are still happening today. Yep, we're somehow not fixating on them. We just see them as normalized. Email scams are totally normal now. But we still haven't built a way to completely eradicate the elusive Nigerian prince yet. It's still here, you know?
Yeah, and oftentimes those, unfortunately, still falling for those scams are those who don't fully understand the technology, and that usually, unfortunately, happens to be the elderly.
Yeah, that's understandable.
So expecting Web3 to be fully safe, straight from the get-go, right from the onset, is very short-sighted. Mm-hmm. However, it's only a matter of time before that improves.
Oh, for sure. People are working on it now. And just remember, Bitcoin survived its bad PR of the Silk Road days and is here to stay. NFTs are going through the ringer right now, but they are not going anywhere, guys.
And TLDR, basing your entire understanding, an impression of one technology on a fairly outdated understanding / news cycle of something similar is not the way to go. We really, like Katarina said, need to take the time to educate ourselves properly, as opposed to just lumping things together because they're convenient, because of our bias, into the same group.
Yeah, absolutely. Keeping that open mind, I think, has been a very, very common thread here.
Yeah, and being open to proving yourself wrong.
Something right? that we really lack right now in society.
Very much so.
Next point that we hear quite often is that NFTs specifically are rugs and Ponzi schemes, okay? And I agree. There is no doubt that there are many NFT projects that indeed were Ponzi schemes and straight up scams. The project was successful by purely having people in the community try and get other people to buy, you know, sweep the floor, all that sort of thing. Yeah. They were there. And it does appear like that for many projects as well, too, right? We talk about these scams, actually, in episode 2 very openly, like a couple examples. You know, they are horrific. They are incredibly unjust, especially since the courts are just now starting to try and persecute crypto and NFT scammers. you know, so late to the chase.
Yeah, and it's been the wild, wild west for a really long time, and it's only now starting to be tamed in some way.
Yeah. So the blanket statement, every NFT is being a Ponzi scheme, is straight up wrong. It's blatantly obtuse to the facts.
Yeah, and the truth is, and we will not deny this, yes, some creators are scammers. Yes, they exist. However, when you look at the established brands that are entering the space right now, they are not going to risk their existing reputation to build a Ponzi and screw you. They're not. They're building in Web3 for a variety of reasons, financial or not, but oftentimes they see the promise of the technology and they are trying to build, you know, another arm of interaction for their consumers and their audience. And hopefully accrue a little bit more sales in the process.
So people crying on Twitter right now about Starbucks Odyssey and how Starbucks is now listing a Ponzi scheme. Guys, come on. Starbucks is not going to start a Ponzi scheme. Think about what's on the line here for them. Okay. There's something more here. Have an open mind. Learn and see what they have to offer.
Yeah. I just chuckle. There's.
We have to at this point.
Well, it's why we're doing what we're doing, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
It's why hopefully you're listening to this.
So the final point. And I think one of the most widely popularized points that actually has changed very recently is the environmental impact of NFTs.
Definitely. This was one of the most pervasive arguments against NFTs and crypto as a whole. Now, I want to preface that we are not talking about Bitcoin. We're not talking about any other cryptocurrency or any other blockchain. We are specifically talking about the Ethereum blockchain because it is the largest blockchain that a majority of NFTs are built on. Mm-hmm. And the original argument was that NFT transactions require a lot of energy and produce a lot of carbon emissions. So Ethereum blockchain, bad. Okay. Now, without diving into too many details, there's a little bit of background that you need to know. Very quickly about the Ethereum blockchain is that very recently, September 13th, it underwent a merge from proof of work to proof of stake. I'm not going to get into the details of what that means. That could be a whole episode in and of itself. Definitely Google it if you are more interested about the nuances. But very simply put, what this merge means is it just changed several things about how the blockchain operates, as well as the amount of energy that it consumes.
So let's get some numbers in front of you so you can understand what that change looked like. So prior to September 13th, Ethereum's total energy consumption was about 112 terawatt hours per year. It's huge. Let's put that in context. It is equivalent to the entire energy consumption annually for the country of the Netherlands or Switzerland, and the carbon emissions of NFT transactions and Ethereum transactions were equivalent to that of Singapore at 53 metric tons per year. That's a lot.
Yikes, that's a lot. And this is the main argument you always heard when you saw the tweets and the headlines. NFTs are bad. They take up as much energy as a small country. It's true.
It is true.
It was true. It was true.
However, the recent switch to proof of stake will reduce this energy expenditure annually by more than 99.95%.
Wow.
That's a lot. So the total energy expenditure for using Ethereum is now going to be closer to 2.01 terawatt hours per year.
That is a gigantic and enormous reduction.
Seriously. But, you know, I can't quantify what a terawatt hour looks like. So let's compare it. Let's try and make this a bit more tangible, guys. So let's compare the use cases of Ethereum, because there's many, with other technologies that have similar use cases and their energy consumptions, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's start with Ethereum being a store of value as an investment, okay? We can compare its energy use to that of mining gold, right? Mm-hmm. Mining Ethereum, mining gold. Mining gold has been estimated to expend about 240 terawatt hours per year. You know, and I know Michael said we're not talking about Bitcoin, but mining gold actually takes more energy than mining Bitcoin, which is about 200 terawatt hours per year. So let that sink in, guys. Let's take it even further. If we use ETH as a currency, for transactions. Let's compare it to paper money and coin production globally, okay? On the low end, the estimated global paper bill energy consumption in 2014, which is a long time ago, I couldn't really find more data than that, but it was at that point, before we started printing all this money in 2020, it was about 18.4 million gigajoules of energy, 10 billion liters of water, and 3.2 million tons of carbon produced.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
That's just paper money. Let's talk about coins, because we got to mine those. The production of about 60 billion coins a year, again, this is 2014 numbers, not 2020 or 2022 numbers, weighing approximately 210,000 tons of metal. The energy for coin production globally is 39.6 million gigajoules and 6.7 million tons of carbon produced.
Wow. And none of those two examples that Katarina just mentioned even take into account the amount of energy that is needed for the rest of the elements or aspects of the actual
use of money.
Use of money,
yeah,
in the chain.
This is literally just making the money, not moving the money.
Banking the money. It's not paying for the lights to keep, you know, the banks on, the energy needed for the vaults. It's not paying the staff and the tellers and the amount of energy that's needed for them to get to their place of work, to worry. It's not paying the guards, right, that are going to transport the money, and their armored trucks, the planes, the boats, all of it. That's a shit ton of energy.
And, like, just think about the fact that this is physical money. It has a life cycle. Digital currency doesn't, right? Eventually, that money can't be used anymore. It's been 2 years. It's old. It's going to go in the garbage.
It gets phased out, yeah.
It gets phased out. So let that sink in. The amount of carbon emissions and energy used from our monetary system and how that compares to digital monetary systems.
And that never gets talked about. That never, ever comes up in any of these arguments when cryptocurrency and the blockchain and NFTs are shat on.
Yep. So let's talk about another example beyond currency, okay? Ethereum has other uses. You know, if we categorize it as a digital payments platform, as akin to PayPal, PayPal's estimated energy consumption annually is 0.26 terawatt hours a year. Okay, 0.01, 0.26. Ethereum wins. As an entertainment platform, you know, NFTs could be a form of entertainment in a way. We could compare that to, I don't know, the gaming industry, which uses approximately 34 terawatt hours a year. A lot. Furthermore, estimates, let's compare it to Netflix as an entertainment platform. Netflix energy consumption is, you know, hard to quantify, but it's approximately 0.45 terawatt hours per year. 0.45, 0.01. Let's take it one more step further. Let's compare Ethereum as an entertainment platform to that of YouTube, which is approximately expending about 244 terawatt hours per year. Although these values do range a lot depending on the type of device that's streaming the videos and where the video is coming from the underlying infrastructure and its data centers. So approximately that, but that's a lot.
That's a lot. And to put that into even simpler terms and to, I guess, quantify it in an easier
way.
Make it tangible. People consumed 45 times more energy watching Gangnam Style in 2019 than proof of stake Ethereum will use in just 1 year.
Oh, geez. That's awkward. With all of this in mind, the environmental impact of NFTs and Ethereum specifically is now moot. And it's not something that you can just hang your hat on. If you continue to say that NFTs and Ethereum is bad for the environment, I certainly hope you're also revolting against the banks, the mints, and any company listed above for comparison. Like, stop using money altogether if you are going to talk about how bad NFTs are for the environment.
Yeah, so if you use this argument, but you're a gamer or you watch YouTube videos or, you know, you indulge in the occasional streaming of Netflix, or maybe you do all of the above, then you really have no right rallying behind the environmental argument anymore, because it's quite hypocritical. You know, if you're keen on doing your part for the environment. You cannot just hand pick and choose which energy sucks you choose to condemn and which ones you choose to indulge in.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't.
You can't.
And
these
furthermore,
are the facts.
Sorry?
These are the facts.
These are the facts. It's straight, cold, hard facts. And I think furthermore, you know, the same is true for the media and the same is true for, you know, the very wealthy people at the top that attack your use of NFTs. It's a pretty moot argument. It would be like Taylor Swift, who is the worst carbon emissions polluter out of all the celebrities because of the amount that she flies in her private jet. It would be like her attacking you for using a plastic straw that one time while she travels 15 minutes from LA to San Diego on her private jet. It's laughable.
Oh my God.
As time goes on, right, and blockchain tech will get even more efficient, it will get more environmentally friendly. In fact, those that are mining it right now are already pursuing that. And maybe we talk about this in another episode, but they are already incentivized to seek out more sustainable energies mm-hmm. to maintain their bottom line.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely.
Like if you're a miner, you do not want to spend a lot of money on the most expensive energy sources. You want to find and place and put the infrastructure in place to get the cheapest amount of energy. So you are seeing a lot of them seeking out wind energy. They're seeking out solar energy. They're seeking out stranded natural gas or even simply tapping into isolated waterfalls or rivers and putting in, you know, dams and turbines in those places to get the energy out of that because it's ever flowing and mm-hmm. free mm-hmm. and it's environmentally friendly, mm-hmm. right? Versus banking, you know, gold mining, PayPal, Netflix, YouTube, they're for the most part most likely not going to change beyond what, you know, their current carbon footprints are.
Probably
at least not at the same rate.
Oh,
that,
for sure.
That the blockchain will.
So those are the main arguments, everyone. We brought up quite a few today. And these are things that brands and creators are going to face, whether you like it or not, when you're building your NFT. We explained the argument, rationale. We discussed where the merits lie. I think we did a pretty good job of seeing both sides.
Yeah,
and being fairly objective
there. Painting
both
sides of the coin.
Yep. And, you know, also pointing out where the shortcomings of these arguments can exist. We hope it opened your mind a bit.
And this is not all. You know, next week we are going to build off of this. We're mm-hmm. going to take a lot of this further and provide examples, you know, of how existing brands in the space have launched their own NFT projects already, from rock bands to coffee conglomerates. You know who that one is. And we're going to explore, you know, what they did well, what the response has been from their existing audience and how they've navigated any setbacks. So we're then going to hopefully synthesize this, these lessons for you in a way that you can apply to your own business or strategy.
So look forward to episode 6. Thank you so much for listening to Not a JPEG, episode 5. We really are grateful that you were here today. If you have a moment, hit that subscribe button on whatever podcasting app or YouTube if you're watching it now, although you probably should sign off YouTube if you're watching it now because of the environmental impact. Regardless, hit that subscribe button. If you can give us a thumbs up or a rating, that would be super amazing and we'd be very grateful for that. Of course, if you want to connect with us, hang out with us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, we'd love for you to give us a little follow there at Not a JPEG Podcast. And remember, tell everybody you know that at Not a JPEG is your new favorite podcast. Thanks so much.
See you next time.